What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, number 133, Stretch Yourself. We are talking with Rashad Ford today. Rashad Ford is a certified strength and conditioning specialist working for Memorial Hermann Ironman Sports Medicine Institute, and he's working out of two different locations there. We're going to be talking with about stretching and functional movement, ways to prevent injury. So I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, sitting right beside me.
Jose.
Jess. Gabby.
Matthew.
All right, and then we have Leslie over here on Twitter and working the chat. Jess will also be working the chat for the live stream. Adela is you doing the Ustream social feature. Leslie is also supposed to be on Twitter, so if you got hashtag TheSMB on Twitter, hopefully Leslie can find that, ask those questions, comments there, and she'll be tweeting out some cliff notes for our conversation today with Rashad. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can find all that information using hashtag DSMB on Twitter. And then I just told you about all the different ways to connect if you're watching or listening live, which we do almost every single Wednesday at about 11 o'clock. But without much further ado, Matthew.
Mr. Ford, can you please tell us about yourself briefly?
Yeah, sure can. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you guys for also having me. So background strength conditioning, I've been doing it for nearly 10 years now. Been thankful and blessed to have the opportunity to work with multiple populations, from geriatric, from young adults to teenagers, kids, and also up through your, of course, high school, collegiate, and also professional athletes. So it's been a big joy and a thankful opportunity in which I'm being able to experience and hopefully be able to spread some of this knowledge and, of course, get more people interested in the field as far as strength and conditioning, and hopefully get more coaches involved in high schools also.
All right, so since you work with pretty much all the populations, what's your favorite one to work with?
I would say favorite, hopefully they're not listening, but the others, that is. But I would say geriatric, to be honest. Had an opportunity to work with them for over 2 years, and just their enjoyment and just seeing how they're able to involve and be able to do more exercises, from maybe starting off in which maybe at one point they have limited range of motion of maybe an arm, or they're not able to possibly extend a leg as far out, but just them being consistent with their workouts and also continuing to come, and just their motivation behind it. I mean, they're just so thankful each and every time, and it just inspires you to want to come and become and just do better things for them to help them improve. But I mean, of course, along with that, I mean, working with the professional athlete, it's always a joy also.
Yeah, see, that would be my guess, is if you had said the athlete, you know, because honestly, I did a internship at a physical therapy clinic, and part of the reason I was like, I don't want to do physical therapy because I don't want to work in a clinic, mm-hmm. and I don't want to work with somebody who just did a knee reconstruction, or someone who's just been sitting in a chair all day and they're 85 years old and now their back's hurting. Well, yeah, it's because you don't move.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting that's your preferred population. So
it's just a joy. I mean, for them, like you said, sitting in a chair, I mean, they just don't know exactly what they can do. So in some cases, there's like, well, you know, doctor told me I can only do this, so I'm just going to stick to this bare minimum. Opposed, I mean, in which they can actually do a little bit more, of course, you know, in the right state, of course, in a controlled environment initially.
All right. And then just to throw this out there before, this is actually, I told Rashad this, but this is the first episode that the whole set of questions that we originally came up with was from the students, and so it should be interesting, and it's cool for me to see them kind of grow and develop and be able to create questions. So we'll see how this works out here. All right, go ahead.
Is it healthy to stretch before an intense workout?
Definitely. It's a must. Definitely a must. Reason being because, one, the body needs to be warm. So stretching, we'll go a little bit more into it as far as dynamic stretching. That's what you want to do before you actually begin an activity. Dynamic stretching would be you actively going through the motions, in which you're not going to go out and maybe do that old school type of stretching, which is static stretching, in which you're going down, reaching for your toes possibly, and holding a stretch up to 20 to 30 seconds. So, of course, core temperature needs to be risen. Also, it decreases the chances of injuries. Also, can increase performance. So, stretching before a workout is a must.
All right, so you said the dynamic stretching and core, raising your core temperature. So what is your normal, if you're working, say you're working with your geriatric mm-hmm. patients, what are you going to do for them to warm up? Because, I mean, they're kind of like paying by the hour, so you're not going to spend half the time with them warming up.
No, definitely.
What are you going to do with them there for warm up?
So typically, if there's no limitations or contraindications, typically I'll put them on a bike. More likely, it's going to be a recumbent bike to initially start off with, something, give them some type of back support. From there, we also can put them on a hand bike and then just have them do some simple stretches. If they're not able to stand for long periods of time, we can do some things in a chair in which they're possibly kicking out, extending their legs to help them warm up. Also, you can do a little march in a chair, have them do high knees in a chair also. So just being creative with it. I mean, there's always a way.
Gotcha. Marching in a chair. But even those things, like if I think about it now that you're saying those translate to our injured athlete population, you know, because sometimes a kid can't do running, you know, maybe they have a back injury, but we still want them to warm up, those kind of things. So
definitely.
All right. What about, what would you normally do for an athlete to warm up?
For an athlete, depending on the athlete and their sport. So typically you want the athlete to work through the motions in which they're going to be either competing in if they're about to start a competition, or let's say we're just going to go through resistance training. We need them to do some form of a squat, maybe some form of upper body push and pull where there can be a push-up or some form of body weight row, but working in multi-directions. Also, hip mobility is very important along with shoulder mobility.
All right, so just general body, focusing on the exercises that they're going to be performing.
Exactly, preparing the body for the activity to come.
Okay.
What are the effects of not stretching?
The effects of not stretching, oh, we see that a lot walking around. Effects of not stretching, so of course, can lead to, of course, tight muscles, which can lead to acute or chronic injuries, acute being short-term, chronic being long, especially for a population that is very sedentary. So let's say your office workers, they're spending up to sometimes 6 to 8 hours, depending on where they're working, sitting in a chair, typing away on a computer. What typically they experience low back issues, either that or upper back issues, because they're sitting for such a long period of time. So one, the hip flexors are shortened. And then also with the upper back and their computer typing, they become rounded because they're not really being conscious. Of course, they're just trying to work, but of their posture. So for those guys, I would say, you know, of course you have to work, but if you can, get a standing desk or get up and move as much as you can. But typically that's what the I would say sedentary population is going to see. Now, for your athletes, for them not stretching much, it can lead to, of course, decreased performance. It can increase injury rates. And also, in some possibilities, could shorten their careers also. Because, I mean, if they're having repetitive, whether it be hamstring pulls or some type of injury, of course, if they're not doing the things to properly stretch and also strengthen at the same time, then it could set them back even longer.
Can you hurt yourself from overstretching?
Yes, you can. So, of course, flexibility is something we all need. But we all, well, I'm not going to say all, but we can't spend too much time stretching. Typically, it can occur if we're doing yoga for, let's say, a good 5 days out of a week. It's hard to put an actual number on that. But just being mindful of not overstretching a joint. So typically, the way you know you're going to overstretch your joint or how the body might feel, you may feel a burning sensation as you're stretching. Possible chance that you may feel a pop or even hear a pop, which in some cases you may be possibly tearing the tissue a little bit. So there is connective tissue around the muscle, also fascia, and we want that connective tissue to stay healthy. So a good comparison would be a rubber band. What typically happens to a rubber band after you expand it for a long period of time? Two things.
It gets loose.
It gets loose, and what other thing might happen? It pops, exactly. So just like a muscle. So in some cases, if we elongate it too much and we're not bringing some type of strength or stability back to it, but we're constantly stretching, possible chance that muscle can pop. In some cases, if it's too tight also, it could pop too.
Gotcha. All right, so I know we have a couple people watching live, a couple people Matt Babasek joining us. He used to work here in Pasadena ISD. We also have, is it Rob DeJohn? Rob, is Leslie? Is it Rob in there? I know Coy Van Valkenburg is in there. There's a couple other people in the chat room. So if you guys have questions, make sure you type them in there, and then hopefully either I'll see them or one of the kids will. Feel free to make comments in there. So I just wanted to give a shout out to some of those people watching live. And Adam Kukinzi said he was playing it over the loudspeaker in his training room there. So nice. Shout out to you, Adam. So you got a lot more people than just us here listening to you live. So
cool.
What is the quickest way to be flexible?
Quickest way to be flexible? Consistency. Just taking that time out and actually spending time to stretch. I mean, it's with anything. If you want to get better at it, you have to spend the time at it. If you want to become faster, you need to run faster. If you want to increase your grade in algebra, you better hit them books. So consistency.
All right, so some tips on that. Because I've said before, if I was to ever hire a personal trainer, it would be just somebody to stretch me, because mm-hmm. it is no fun to stretch. Like, to me, it just stinks.
Yeah.
So maybe if I took yoga or something like that, but what are you, some thoughts on there?
I'm kind of with you there, because stretching can become very boring. I mean, one, you're sitting there just holding a stretch for up to 20 or 30 seconds.
And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely for guys. Most of us. We're pretty tight. But I would say, if you can find time or motivate yourself to do it by yourself, maybe get a partner to work out with, in which they're going to hold you accountable at the end of the workouts to stretch. Well, before and after, to actually warm up and stretch properly. If you can't find that, then yeah, definitely go check out a yoga class, maybe 2 to 3 times out of a week. But definitely we need to stretch. I would say it's probably one of the biggest components, somewhat left out of some training programs, is actually spending time stretching, working on flexibility. But we definitely need to spend more time doing it.
All right.
Is it true that for certain people might be impossible to get their splits due to their waist, to their hips are?
All right, so Jess is in Dan's, and I believe Jess came up with this question. So
she did.
All right. Jess, are you able to do a split?
Yeah.
All right, you're much better than me. It's never going to happen. Congratulations. For some, now speaking anatomically, there's going to be some limitations, of course. For some, just don't have a great degree of flexibility. Is it impossible to do a split? Depends on if we're trying to do a full split or partial split. So just depending on that individual, I would say, there is a way an individual will be able to work up to doing a split if they stay consistent with the stretching program or stretching routine and actually work on splits also with the stretching routine. I don't think there are honestly like factors that's going to limit you from doing a split fully. In some cases, your split just may not be in which you want it to be compared to someone else's. But I feel like if you spend the time, you'll be able to get there eventually to some degree.
So it just depends on how bad you want it, whether you're going to work or not.
Exactly.
All right. I don't have any more questions about splits or dancing. So, Jess, you have any other questions there about your splits?
No.
Not this time?
No.
If it is impossible, how can one tell if they are in that situation?
If it is impossible, I would say if they're unable to do it. Two, if their hips are constantly barking at them whenever they attempt to do it, they may need to take some steps back and work on some different forms of stretching to actually, you know, maybe partially get into maybe like 1 foot forward, 1 foot back, and that knee still being bent, the rear leg, and then eventually just try to progress to that. But just listening to your body, I would say, would be the biggest thing, honestly. What's a split? Something that should not be forced. Just like with stretching, it shouldn't be forced. It should be comfortable or slight degree of discomfort, but it should never cause you pain, unbearing pain.
All right, so we've been talking about warming up and stretching and those kind of things, and you're saying not forcing it. So, like, what about when we have our students or our athletes in the athletic training room laying on their back, mm-hmm. using a strap to pull their leg towards them to work on stretching their hamstring? So that's not in any way replicating what's going to happen on the field. What are your thoughts there for that? And I mean,
I would say for that, it's going to be more of your that would be good after your training. It's more of your static form of stretching, which you're having to hold it maybe for what, 20 or 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. There's been research put out in which comparing dynamic stretching opposed to static stretching before competition or before practice, wherever it may be. And it's been shown to static stretching has been shown to decrease performance as far as power output. So with that, I mean, translating to actual on-field play or on court or the weight room, dynamic is going to be the best way to go, and static at the end.
Gotcha. Okay.
How do you properly stretch a muscle from a previous injury?
That is a very good question. Very good. So we'll start off just injury, no surgeries. I would say, honestly, through a comfortable range of motion, of course. The ultimate goal is trying to get that limb, wherever it may be, to the same or as close to the other limb's range of motion. That way, I mean, you'll use the other limb for comparison in some sense. Now, for someone that may have went through surgery, they may have a little bit more scar tissue build up there. So it's even more important for them to try to gain back their range of motion as soon as possible, because as the healing process goes, that scar tissue is going to build up, which can some chances decrease the range of motion. So just honestly, just listening to your body and making sure you're not overstretching. So no burning, of course. In some cases, for those ones that may have built up that scar tissue, some popping may occur, and that just may be the scar tissue breaking up.
You said no burning?
No burning, guys. So as you're stretching and holding your stretch, it should feel like basically both ends of the muscle in which you're stretching just getting pulled. But it shouldn't feel like a burning sensation. Typically, that's a sign in which you may be overstretching. Has anyone ever experienced that?
Well, I feel like every time I stretch, it burns.
It burns. Okay. May want to back off for a little bit.
Maybe. Like, even if I'm using, like, the foam roller on my my calves, my Achilles area, like, maybe it's not a burning sensation. Maybe it's just the stretching, and I'm kind of just lumping them all together. I don't know.
Quite possibly, yeah. Foam roller is a good tool to use. Very good tool.
All right.
So how do you prevent yourself from overstretching?
Listening to your body. So, like I said, those burning sensations, if you feel that, kind of back off of it. Also, another instance would be if you've kind of noticed maybe at shoulders or other areas of your body in which it's maybe become somewhat unstable or unstable joint, then if you've been really consistent with stretching, but yet you're not putting any type of strength training along with your stretching routine and bringing some form of stability to that joint, in some cases, you may need to back off the stretching for a little bit. Not totally quit. You still need to include it, but also add some resistance training along with it to bring some stability.
Does the application of ice or heat have an impact on the final results from stretching?
Yes, it does. So typically, if you're going to ice or heat, you're going to use your heat before you can use heat as part of your warm-up. For some that may have gone through, let's say, some form of cuff injury, rotator cuff that may be, typically they'll come in and they'll get a hot pack put on their shoulder just to kind of warm up before they actually start working on mobility type of drills, whether it be pulling the cords, working on range of motion, things of that sort, just to kind of warm up the tissue, also the tendons, and getting loose, opposed to coming in cold and trying to do some form of those activities. And then also, ice is typically going to be used for after the training session or after competitions. In some cases, for those that may experience swelling after they work out or after a competition, it's good to help decrease that inflammation.
All right, do you have any specific data as far as like the effectiveness of heat in making the muscles more pliable, or the ice and reducing the pliability of muscle? You have any specific data there?
I don't have numbers on my mind, but try to stay up as much on the research as I can. And articles that I've written, it's shown that heating before has been more productive as far as icing before when it came as far as range of motion, things of that sort. Typically, whenever you ice before, it's going to stiffen up the joint opposed to the heat, which is going to help increase the core temperature and then help also loosen up the joint.
Gotcha.
That's a good question. I'll get you some numbers, though.
All right.
Should the stretching routine be different depending on the athlete's sport?
Definitely should.
All right, so Jose, they're going to have to leave here in just a minute. So Jose plays soccer year-round. So talk to him real quick about what he should do for soccer.
Oh, Jose, year-round. Okay. You're a man. That's pretty tough. So definitely for you guys, there's always extension involved. So quads, hamstrings are extending. So it's really important for you to keep your hamstrings loose and also strong. And then also strong quads. Your biggest injury in soccer is ACL. So that could either come from contact or non-contact. In some cases, that could be in which you're not strong enough. In some cases, it may just be in which maybe you need a little bit more flexibility. Of course, you don't need to be too lax because you need to have some strength and order whenever you run into contact. But definitely lower body stretching is definitely going to be really important for you. Of course, along with the flexibility, core strength is going to be really important. So dynamic before, so taking a jog, running, warming up, and doing maybe some high knees, butt kicks, leg kicks, things of that sort before you actually start playing. And also doing multi-direction, so just not forward, but also doing things to your side, so shuffling, things of that sort.
All right, so they are taking off, so now it becomes the hard part wherever
thank you guys.
I have to manage all of this stuff by myself. So we'll be working through the questions. All right, so maybe towards the end, we'll have you demonstrate some stuff, Darian. I can kind of talk about it. I don't know if you wanted to demonstrate or if you had some videos that you've already recorded and you want to, you know,
I could play demonstrate. Those. Or, it's right, no problem.
So we'll talk about the we'll go with that towards the end.
Okay.
All right, so one of the things that I've been discussing, and it was a Twitter conversation and stuff like that, is squats.
Mm-hmm.
So in football, I don't ever see a squat, like on the field, right? So we get these guys that come in with back injuries, and I know Matt Babisek, he's listening live. He was the girls' weight room coordinator, and he said for like 6 weeks, they would go in there and do squats with only their body weight so that the girls could learn to do squats, or they would do only the bar,
mm-hmm.
something like that, so that they could reduce the injuries. So specifically on football, and then we'll hit on some of the other sports, is the squat relevant?
It's a great question. Squat has always been, and I think will always be, a exercise in just about any football's weightlifting program, to be honest with you. Now, in some cases, it does translate because, I mean, it is a great exercise to work as far as strength, of course, power output. And I mean, but actually, do they ever get down to 90? In some sense, yes, they do. Whenever they're about to make a tackle or possibly a running back about to make a cut in which he has to drop and maybe change and shift directions. But your coach definitely has the right mindset. I mean, squat along with deadlift are probably the biggest two exercises that cause injuries in the weight room. So educating the kids on proper movement and body weight's the perfect way to go. And I mean, from there, putting a bar either above their shoulders or on their back or in front, and necessarily doesn't have to be a weighted bar. You can use maybe some PVC pipe and actually teach them, okay, well, now I need you to put your hands on your back to kind of get your body used to performing a back squat. Now I want to see you lower yourself and let's see if that movement's still the same in which you're doing with just your own body weight and your hands possibly at your side or in front of you.
All right, so you're saying the squat is still relevant in building some of the power?
Yes.
But it has to translate at some point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so one of the things that one of the people in the conversation was saying doing a split squat is a lot more functional than doing the standard squat where you're basically sitting on a stool or sitting on a bench, you know, because almost in no sport do you do that. And so mm-hmm. what are your thoughts there?
Well, depends on the program, honestly, and the goals of the program. So in most cases, you're going to be able to back squat definitely way more than you're going to be a split squat, because one split squat is predominantly in a single leg activity because you're basically in a lunge position. Now, as far as being functional, I would say it depends upon the athlete. So it's going to vary from athlete to athlete. Do I feel like squats should be taken out? No, but I'm not saying a back squat is all that you need to do, because there's different forms of squats, from your back squat from your front squat. Like you said, the split squat. There's so many different forms. So I would say find that one that works for your athlete and go ahead and use that one. Back squat's not going to work for everyone. So you take a basketball player or maybe a volleyball player or even a football player, which may be, let's say, 6'5 or 6'6 and above, or that kid that just had that growth spurt in which they may not know how to properly move through space. So a back squat may not be the best thing for them initially. You may have to back off of that due to their growth spurt, or for that tall athlete, they may just never be able to reach, you know, get as low as you want them to get. And then plus the lever arm's just so big in which you don't want to load them and have them possibly tip forward with just that huge of a trunk. So for those guys, typically, I mean, you would either give them some form of a front squat. It could be a goblet squat in which you're holding the dumbbell in front of them. They don't always necessarily have to be loaded with the bar. I would say go ahead and get the movements down, and that be the foundation, and then just build upon that depending on as the athlete is progressing.
All right. Yeah, I like the idea of teaching them. And one of the coaches I was talking with, who isn't in charge of the weight room, he's, he did some of the after school stuff. He was saying, we really should not be lifting heavy with the freshmen, maybe even until like after, spring break, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They should just be learning all the movements, learning all the motions. They should be, we should be really coaching them up on that. And the sophomores kind of the same way, is just, not until Christmas should they be ever lifting heavy, because they need to be practicing. And so I'm just wondering how I can, obviously a big part of my job is to prevent injuries. And I'm wondering how I can prevent injuries without spending all of my time in the weight room. Just the functionality of some of these, and what I can say, hey, let's try move away from this or towards this. And, you're an expert. You do a lot more of the weight training stuff than I do, functional movement stuff there. So again, feel free to share whatever you like there.
Yeah, definitely. So let's say, are you guys doing any form of Olympic lifts or things of that sort, or derivatives of Olympic lifts?
I know there's the squat, the power clean, the bench, and there's one other that they consider the big four.
What is deadlift that? Is another one they're doing, or hang clean, or
I don't know if they're doing deadlifts, because I think the other coach was saying, they don't ever do deadlifts or good mornings. They're just doing the other stuff. So I can't remember exactly, but
okay. I would say, so let's say for a freshman or a sophomore, and they want them to learn maybe the power clean or hang clean. So of course, you would teach them the movements primarily with a PVC pipe, or maybe a lighter bar, maybe a 15 or 25 pound bar, unloaded with plates, of course. That way they learn the proper movement. But let's say for some reason, just it's not working for the athlete. So instead of doing away with, power oriented exercises, give the kid a medicine ball and have him use it there. He can do overhead throws, things of that sort, med ball slams. The ultimate goal is to get that triple extension. So the triple extension from your ankles, knees, and your hips, and getting that firing and working on moving the bar as quick as possible, in which they can do the same thing with the medicine ball. So same principle still there. You're still working on power output.
I'm just visualizing in my head triple extension. So it took me a minute to figure that out.
I got you.
All right. So we talked briefly about soccer specifically, and again, football, we're talking about squats, they have a lot of hip things because of the squats, and then low back stuff. So what are some of your ways that you prevent injuries in your patients when they're doing squats? Let's focus on your athletic population here.
So typically what I'll do, let's say if it's someone just coming in initially, we'll go through some form of a movement screening. Exercise that I typically like to use is overhead squat. So usually I'll just give them a dowel or PVC pipe and have them squat down as low as they can. From there, I'm looking for asymmetry. So if they're leaning to one side more than the other, or if there's valgus there, or their knees collapsing in, or varus, if they're going out too far with their knees, also the position of their trunk. So are they leaning forward as they squat down? Are they able to stay upright? Also, you can go down, even look at their ankles, in which as they squat, are their feet turning out, things of that sort. So kind of getting a general idea of how the athlete moves And from there, okay, well, is this a good candidate for maybe a back squat? Or should I kind of pull him or her back and we just do maybe a goblet squat? Or let's leave them unloaded and let's learn how to squat properly. So just taking those steps and kind of moving, well, either forward or moving backwards, just depending on the athlete and how they move. And of course, their injury history, if they have had past injuries. Also getting to know that about them.
All right, so then with the football, with the, you said the triple extension, is that some of the reason that they have hip injuries is because they're not fully extending, or is it because they're not going down far enough in their squat?
Well, the hip injuries could lead to, well, it could stem from possibly lack of mobility of the hips, in which they're not able to get as low, and then they're also loaded also at maybe a heavy load. So just that, I should say, not being able to properly squat, and then they're being loaded with excess weight on top of that, and that just may be too much for them. So maybe backing off of that, then other things you can do besides mobility is working on strengthening those smaller muscles. So glute med is a great muscle to strengthen, in which you may see athletes that may have the valgus collapse of their knees, and usually that's what it could be stemming from. But I would say going back to hips, with the squats, it could either be probably deficits of just lack of hip mobility.
All right, so glute meds, how are we going to strengthen those? Because I've seen some research recently that doing the fire hydrants or whatever it is, those are like real hard on your back. So what are your thoughts there for strengthening your glutes?
So for the glute med, anything that's going to have you abduct, so going away from midline. So clamshells, I want to say at 60 degrees, positioning of the knees have been shown to be pretty productive as far as activation of the glutes. So they did EMG testing. Also, lateral band walks, things of that sort, in which you put a mini band, starting off maybe around the knee and doing lateral walks from there. Then also you can throw in another band if you like and put it around your knee and ankle to add yourself a little bit more resistance. So you can do that in a squat position or standing tall, but anything that's going to cause you to abduct. So if you have no equipment, body weight, clamshells are good. Also side lying hip abductions or leg raises to the side.
All right, good. I'm going to have to remember all those. And it was so much, the more I do the podcast, I talk to people, and I think going through school, you're taught to, or I was taught to evaluate, you know, if there's a knee problem, you just check out the knee. Okay, good. But the more I'm realizing that it's the knee, maybe an ankle or a hip or, you know, a low back problem. And so I just have to remember to involve all of the, I think they call it kinetic chain, all the
there
kinetic chain.
Yep.
And it's hard for me because I've not had a formal education. You know, I keep learning about it, but you just have to break out of the thing. Maybe I need to, once Bill retires in there, I'll have to hire somebody young so he can teach me all this stuff.
There you go. Hold on to Bill. I don't know him, but hold on to him.
No.
Trying to save you, Bill.
We're a great team. That's what I'm saying. He plans on retiring in the next like 10
years
or so, but
cool.
We work real well together. But that's what I'm saying. I just got to, I need like I said, a personal trainer to teach me this stuff just because I got.
Well, you're busy.
All this other stuff.
Yeah.
Three kids like we talked about before. But all right, so functional movement for, let's say, basketball, functional warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to put a functional warm-up in for a basketball athlete?
So for a basketball athlete, initially, I would start them off, of course, predominantly it's a lower extremity, of course, upper. It's full body, basically. So typically, I would have them warm up for a little bit. The warm-up would consist of knee pulls, things of that sort, but kick holes. We'll progress a little bit, picking up the pace. We'll go high knees, things of that sort, A-skips. Bounding also because they're about to jump also. So arm swings to loosen up the upper body.
You said A-skips?
A-skips. So it's somewhat of just doing a high knee, but opposed to being so repetitive with the high knees, you're basically just skipping, bringing that knee up, dorsiflexing the toe as if you're running, doing a high knee, and then landing on that leg in which it's down and just switching basically.
All right.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. I cut you off. Go ahead.
All right. I'll show you. It's all good. So just, and then also, of course, multi-direction. So some type of lateral movement, things of that sort. If you wanted also, I mean, you can do some form of a little cone drill, or maybe if you had time maybe before practice, a little speed ladder work just to get them going as far as footwork, things of that sort, get things firing.
All right, so doing those exercises and then going through practice, and then afterwards you can do some of your static stretching, or you can do dynamic afterwards too if you like. But
predominantly, you'll probably want to stick with the static stretching. So try to cool them down, stretch out those muscles that may be tightened again. But basically, just trying to decrease the core temperature there, try to return it back to their regulation.
All right, I think from what you were describing, I think our basketball coaches do a good bit of that. Coach Barnes has worked. He's done some stuff with like the Rockets and college teams and stuff like that. And so I think he's got a pretty good idea of how to warm up. And I think he's incorporated that and reduced some of the injuries with our basketball players. But football, if we're warming up for a game, what do you think there?
So it's kind of the same concept. I mean, of course, definitely one has more contact than the other. But yet in all, they're still making multi-directional movements. So same concept. So you'll still have them do the high knees, things of that sort, and also do some type of lateral movement. For those guys, typically before a football game, you're not going to have time to throw out a ladder. I wouldn't so much suggest that if you're trying to fit something else in. I would say for there, just kind of stick to those dynamic stretches. Keep them moving.
I know that they do, or they used to do, the karaoke. It's where they kind of like step sideways and like twist and step sideways. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah, karaoke.
Karaoke. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can sing though.
You can sing, not me. So, what are your thoughts there? Because you said hip mobility, and to me, that's like hip and groin mobility. There, what are your thoughts on that?
Karaoke is a great exercise, honestly. I mean, it's been around for, I don't know how long. I've been doing it ever since I was a little kid. But definitely a good one to do. I mean, you can do a regular karaoke, also a high knee karaoke, in which you bring your knee up just a little bit higher opposed to just your regular one.
All right, and then just random. I work a lot of volleyball tournaments, and I've seen kids walk with their foot inverted as part of a warm-up, like maybe ankle mobility. Do you know, have any idea what I'm talking about? Like they're walking like on the outside. They're walking like on the outside of their foot. Like with their, you know, like the inside, the medial side of their foot turned up. So the lateral side of their foot on the ground, that kind of thing, like to stretch out their ankles. You ever seen that?
I can't say that I have, but I can see what they're trying to do though.
I don't know that it's beneficial. I'm just wondering if.
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, I'll probably have to go look that up for you, or ask around the clinic. But no, typically, I mean, of course, basketball along with volleyball, ankles, things of the sort, may be rolled. So I can somewhat see what they're trying to do, kind of loosen up the tendons.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's safe. I don't know. It's a good one. It's a good one.
All right. So anybody in the chat room, if you've ever seen that exercise, what are your thoughts on that? And then I'll try and look. Again, it's hard for me to bounce back and forth, but I'm trying.
Help us out.
So if you've seen the ankle walks or whatever they're called, so. All right, I think we've hit basketball, football, soccer. Baseball, you do a lot of standing. Yes. So it's a slow sport. So what are your thoughts there as far as at baseball? Do they do dynamic warm-ups, even if they may be sitting on the bench for 10, 15 minutes at a time, doing nothing?
Definitely. I mean, with baseball, there is a good ton of standing around. Baseball is my love. So, yeah, I'm going to try to give it as much hype as I can. But if you look at the game, I mean, a play may last up to, let's say, 3 to 8 seconds. It's quick. So pitch, crack of the bat, ball's off the bat, fielder's making a play, throwing a guy out at first or catching the ball if he has to run down the ball, things of that sort. So those guys definitely need to do some form of dynamic stretching. Even if they've been sitting for long periods of time, let's say a guy in the bullpen, your relief pitcher, they need to stay up and stay moving. I'm not saying stay up every inning and do some type of running or dynamic stretching, but they need to find some ways to stay loose. That way, when their numbers call, they don't need to take all this time to warm up. Most relievers have very minimum time to warm up in some cases. So definitely stay up, stay moving. And yes, dynamic stretching is going to be the way to go for those guys.
All right. So then what are some of your ideals for baseball, since it's your love there?
So with baseball, there's a lot of rotational movement in baseball, from the swinging, from the pitching, from the throwing. So working in some of those rotational movements, a lunge with the rotation is great to use. Something that's going to work on thoracic spine mobility, which is huge in baseball. So rotational movements, you can do what they call the world's greatest stretch with the T-spine rotation. I call it the Spider-Man. Things of that sort are definitely going to be beneficial for baseball players.
Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, yeah.
Is that kind of like a crawl walk thing? Like you see Spider-Man walking up the wall, basically?
Exactly. Okay. Just like that.
Yeah, I think I've seen it before, but gotcha. All right. So, for baseball, we would probably have them, you know, typically they'll run poles, like mm-hmm. one or two poles to kind of warm up, and then they'll throw. How would you schedule their warm up? Would you have them run those poles just to kind of get the core temperature up and then do their dynamic rotation stuff and then do their throwing and hitting? Or, like, tell me what your schedule is.
I would go with the schedule you actually just said. So have them do their poles. We'll come back, do a dynamic warm-up, so consisting of the knee pulls, things of that sort. Also loosen up their shoulders, so swings, arm rotations, and then we'll go into our throwing. But for some, they may need some activation work, so getting those muscles to actually turn on and fire. So cuff work would be good, whether that be with a TheraBand, resistance band, whatever they may want to use there. They also can use mini bands, so like I talked about as far as like strengthening glute med, just to kind of get their glutes firing, their hips going, things of that sort. And then we'll go into the throwing, the hitting, and the fielding.
All right, so all that would be before the warm-up. And then that's just my question is, you know, some baseball games can be 3 hours long. Usually yeah. They're like 2 or 2.5 hours. And they warm up like an hour before. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, 6 o'clock they start the functional warm-up, I'm just wondering how long does it carry over? Last?
Most of those guys, carry-over time, that's going to be hard to say. But I would say for most, they've... especially guys that have been playing for a very long time, one, they know their body. So they're going to do enough to get themselves ready to take BP or feel the balls. And then they'll come out. They'll go back usually into the locker room. Some may eat. Some may just take some downtime. And then they'll typically go out before the start of the game and somewhat go through a smaller portion of the routine that they may have just gone through previously. So some of those dynamic stretching, most will start throwing again, some will start taking swings again, just to get themselves ready for the game. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and you know, baseball players are strange, and you know, they have to wear the same socks forever or whatever it is, you know, or yeah, everybody has to sit in the same seat. So they're real superstitious, yeah. But you know, I'm beyond superstition. If I'm trying to prevent injuries, I'm trying to figure out what's going to be best. And again, what I can implement, what I can give my coaches to implement and that kind of stuff. So, yeah. All right. All right. So what else do you have for like other sports? Maybe golf would be probably the same as baseball because it's a lot of rotational, less sprinting, but rotational. What about swimming?
Swimming. Shoulder stability is going to be huge. Well, most of those guys are going to be hypermobile of the shoulders because they're constantly in this motion or some form of a stroke. So in most cases, from what we've seen, what I've seen, there needs to be some stability brought to the shoulders. Of course, they also can experience some form of hip tightness also. So just depending on the athlete and maybe possible injury history. So also stretching out the hips, things of that sort. But majority of them are going to need some form of stability and along with some strength training. For some, they may only swim and they may feel like, okay, that's where they're getting their strength training because they may do it at maybe like a higher rate, things of that sort. But they also need some dry land training also. And that's been shown to translate into the pool also as far as improvements in their performance.
All right. I was doing some research, and one of the things that stretching is kind of controversial is doing specific activities for what you're saying. So like if I do sprint warm-ups, but I'm going to run a mile, then that's not beneficial. Because it was saying like the power... I don't know. I said like SSC, the stretch shortening cycle. Yeah. Stretch shortening cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, is affected. So then, cause all I'm doing is jogging. I'm not really creating power, but mm-hmm. if I'm going to play basketball, then I need to work on making those more compliant so that
prepare for the game.
Yeah. So I'm not tearing my Achilles because that is stiff. So can you talk about the Stretch shortening cycle. Yeah, there you go.
Definitely. So stretch shortening cycle. Sorry. Basically, it occurs when you run at a high velocity. Running's one, but primarily a lot of people look at it as far as like plyometrics. So typically that's where it's viewed. But if you look at running, running is basically, what are you doing? Taking many bounds if you're sprinting, or let's say if you're jogging, maybe taking maybe shorter bounds or smaller hops off of one foot to the other. Mm-hmm. So the stretch shortening cycle is also present there. But definitely, like you said before, you need to prepare your body for those activities. So if you're going to go out and play some basketball, you definitely don't need to go out and run a mile before. I mean, one, I know for me, I'm going to be tired after I run that mile. I'm just going to be honest. I'm not a distance athlete. So you need to do some type of sprinting, some type of jumping, things of that sort to prepare your body and get that system woken up and ready to actually participate in that competition you're about to do.
So again, specific stuff seems to be the deal. All right, so let's kind of hit this right there. Do you think that flexibility can prevent injuries?
I definitely do. Definitely do. Man, you take some athletes and you ask them to reach down and touch your toes. Some may not even be reaching their knees. In some cases, there needs to be, for some athletes, there needs to be some form of tightness. Some athletes feel like, okay, maybe they perform better when they're tight. And then also kind of just that spring that they may feel when they're tight. In all cases, athlete doesn't need to be totally limber. And primarily that's going to be like for your short distance athletes. So like for your 100 meter sprinters, more of your explosive type athletes, you really don't see great flexibility in those athletes opposed to your endurance athletes. They typically have a greater degree of flexibility. But yes, it can definitely prevent injury. A lot of injuries have occurred from not stretching and not having a quality of flexibility.
It would seem the opposite for me. It seemed like the explosive runners, the sprinters, would need more flexibility because there's more demand, like being pulled on those muscles. Mm-hmm. And whereas the long distance runners, they're not pulling nearly as hard. They're just continually pulling. So it seems like it would be the opposite to me. But again, that's why I ask you here.
Gotcha. Well, they still need to be flexible, but degree of flexibility or range of motion may not be as great compared to those other individuals of the endurance athletes. I remember one of my college professor, he said that he had the opportunity to work with a 100 meter Olympian, and he asked him to reach down and touch his toes, and he was nowhere near that. And it's like, okay, well, am I going to spend time working on his flexibility? But yet he's an Olympian athlete. I'm not going to be that guy that messes him up. So let's just make sure he stays healthy and still keeps that somewhat same range of motion. If he's never had any type of issues, let's maintain what he has. And if we find out that it is somewhat hindering his performance, then, yeah, we definitely need to spend a little bit more time on it.
We talked with Mike McKinney and Dan Boothby there at Northeastern University. And one of the things we talked about with Mike was postural restoration. Have you heard of that? PRI, Postural Restoration
Institute? A little bit.
And one of the comments that just kind of stuck with me was Mike said that he's seen people in the courses, in the PRI courses, if they reach down, they can't touch their hamstrings. But because of if they train them on breathing patterns, mm-hmm. Then like within minutes or I don't know how long within the course, he said they can actually touch their toes just because of the way they're breathing. Or the way they're the way the breathing affects the alignment of the body and those kind of things. And so I was just wondering, you haven't heard anything, you don't know much about the PRI?
I'm not too much about the PRI, but I can definitely see where they're going with that. I mean, the body definitely needs and loves oxygen. In some cases when we do stretch, because we may be so focused or we may have some discomfort in which we probably hold our breath because it's becoming unbearing. And we're like, God, I'm just ready for this to be over with. But definitely, I found out when you actually do breathe, take deep breaths in and out, and he's definitely right. I mean, the range of motion does increase. I mean, in some ways you think about it, you're relaxing the body.
All right, so I tweeted out a picture this morning on my forearm. I got a bruise on my forearm because my son is 4 years old, and he tried to karate kick me last night, and I blocked it with my forearm. So if I'm going to be wrestling with my kids, all right, and maybe body slamming them or throwing them on the couch, chasing them around the backyard.
Better get them now before they get you.
Yeah, there's three of them, so they're going to get me. And if I attack the older one, the middle one, he's right there. It's just good night. He is protecting his brother. He will not
go
stop.
At you.
Yeah. So me as a 34-year-old non-athlete, what are some of the things that I can do to help prevent injury from wrestling with my kids? Obviously, I'm not going to say, all right, time out, guys. We're not going to wrestle. I need to go warm up. So,
yeah.
So what are your thoughts there?
Well, definitely keep your head on a swivel. That would be number one. Watch out for that two-year-old coming over your back. I would say definitely just stay moving. I mean, you work, I think, a pretty good active job here. You're up moving around. Stay active. I mean, they're definitely going to be looking for you to stay active, of course, as they get older also. And I believe you will with the sports coming along in their future also. So, yeah definitely stay active and get some strength training in because they're going to get stronger.
So give me some of the advice you give your geriatric patients there, because that's kind of where I'm getting.
Oh, you have some time. Definitely get up, walk, function. If you can do it, do it. Don't look for someone else to do it for you. So keep your body healthy, keep your mind healthy, eat the proper things, which is very important also. That's a huge thing that sometimes overlooked is the nutrition side of things. But definitely just stay active, stretch. Flexibility is something that can be improved on daily. And it also can be, of course, as we see as we get older, become
lost
decreased.
Daily, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, you know, currently I work out. I try to do like bodyweight squats every day. And today I rode my bike to work. And so I think those things are important. And I just want to know, I don't want to be out from work because I was wrestling with my kids. If there's some way that I can, something I can do to prevent it, make it better. So,
head on the swivel. Keep quick. Stay quick, I should say.
All right. So one of the big things, like we talked about, we mentioned, is a foam roller.
Mm-hmm.
We've just started using that, and I really like it. You know, and that was kind of where I got the topic title, stretch yourself, because with the foam roller, you can really stretch yourself. What are your thoughts, uses for the foam roller?
Big fan of the foam roller. Wish I would have thought about it a long time ago. I think I could be retired by now.
Yeah.
But no, foam roller is great to use. Foam roller is good for working out those trigger points that we may have built up possibly in the muscles in which we've just worked out. So typically whenever you're rolling, that's kind of what you're rolling over. Basically, it's the fascia, so the connective tissue around the muscle. So those knots in which you may feel, I'll kind of compare it to Pisado, a good strength coach, taught me this kind of analogy of it, basically. So at a healthy state, basically, is the finished product of the piece of dough. But at, let's say, a damaged state in which you've worked out afterwards, and let's say it's 24 or 48 hours afterwards, which usually DOMS is going to come on, delayed onset muscle soreness, you're looking to kind of course, feel a little bit better. So you grab the foam roller. So those knots you may feel, basically, that is the original starting state of that piece of dough, which starts off as a clump. So you're going to take that pin, just like you would with the piece of dough, that roller, and go ahead and smooth out the tissue, the piece of dough, and get it back to a good state. So that's kind of like the analogy I like to use on as far as the foam roller. But I do suggest using it. You can use it before, and can definitely use it after. Typically after, you're going to spend a little bit more time on it because you're looking for those trigger points or those hot spots you may feel. And typically you'll spend 20 to 30 seconds on those spots in which you may feel some discomfort and then kind of roll off of and come back to it. And it should subside by then. And usually you don't want to spend too much time on it because it's basically like you're just giving yourself your own personal massage,
mm-hmm.
which is some ways great. It's the poor man's massage, I call it in some ways. But just like a massage, if you spend a long periods of doing it or having a massage, possible chance you can become sore from it. If you grab a very aggressive foam roller, in which there are some out there that may have the knobs on it, maybe too much. So those you may need to spend a little less time on them.
Yeah, we have one that's like a kind of a squishy white one. We have like a hard black one. Maybe I'll try and get a couple more so that we can just vary the levels for the athletes. But I really like using them and some of the active release type things where I can't remember how to say it. It's Washaw or Graston where
Graston
where the people are using the thing or you know you're actually using your thumb to mm-hmm. do that kind of stuff. And you know, at first, just like everything, it seems like, oh, that's voodoo. I don't believe in that. But then you see it working and you're like, okay, well, let me at least give it a try. And, you know, we've had some real good success with a chiropractor friend coming in and showing me some stuff and working with an athlete. And, you know, we're using the foam rollers and those kind of things. So
nice.
I think I really feel, and again, I feel like the evidence is kind of on both sides of the fence. There's mm-hmm. nothing solid, but I really feel that general flexibility is going to prevent injuries, and like you said, functional flexibility. And then I think one of the things I didn't ask that I wanted to really ask was, our football players are encouraged to run track to increase their functional movement mm-hmm. from weightlifting. What are your thoughts there?
I think it's great. I think it's a good translation, honestly, from football. Well, it's going to translate into football because, one, I mean, they're going to come in better condition. Two, they also can become faster. One, I mean, then also, I mean, of course, there's a lot less impact on the body too. So I think there's a great translation as far as track and field being functional for football. I think just for every sport you can relate it to another sport as far as how it's going to transition into that sport and possibly make the athlete better. So if you were to take soccer, I mean, you're working hand-eye coordination and tons of cardio. I feel like that could translate perfect into track and field. So for that soccer player that may be very fast, maybe put them in a sprint relay, or maybe they could possibly be a good quarter runner. Also for that athlete that may be able to run all day, hey, let's go run cross country. So I think each sport can translate to the other.
What about the quote-unquote fat guys, the linemen, that they're throwing?
Mm-hmm.
And so what are your...
Oh, it's good. They're pushing people all day right on the line. So it's mm-hmm. definitely, it's good for them. So it's definitely, that's translation right there. And then, of course, like I said, it's not as much stress on them. So it's a good way to stay in shape and also let the body recover from all the pounding that they've taken earlier in the year.
All right. I believe that's all the specific questions. I did want to see some of your lower body, your favorite lower body stretches, and then we can go total body if you want.
Gotcha.
So you can either demonstrate or you can describe or you can give me the YouTube link and we can go there. So what do you want to do there?
I'll probably just demonstrate them for you.
All right. And no I'll problem. Do my best to narrate so that anybody listening, because this is also recorded and released later, so anybody listening later can understand what's going on. So
all right, cool.
I put out those blue mats there if you want to
greatly appreciate it.
So
concrete would be a little rough. All right, where should I set them up?
You can set them right there. I think the I'll move the camera so that it shows right there.
Okay, we're ready.
All right, let's see what you got.
All right, so first one, we'll just do what I call the inchworm. It's a great stretch for your hamstring, lower back also. You also can get a little bit of activation from your upper body if you decide to throw a push-up to it. Also good core activation. So
all right, so inchworm.
I was just trying to set it on there, but let me
okay.
turn this towards you.
All right, so we're talking about inchworm for good core activation. Go ahead.
Hamstring flexibility. So initially, you're going to go down to that old school toe touch. You're not going to hold it there. You're going to reach your end point. Man, I'm flexible today. Usually, I'm getting nowhere near my toes. From here, I bend my knees, walk out to a plank push-up position. In this position, I can decide to do a push-up, but if you see, I'm straight. So core, neutral position. There's no arch in my back, nor am I up. But from here, I take small, choppy steps towards my upper body, keeping my legs as straight as possible, and standing back up.
All right, so the inchworm.
A few more of those. And then also, I'll show you the Spider-Man, which they also call the world's greatest stretch. So what? You get in a lunge position. Here, instead of flexing this rear knee, go ahead and keep it straight. Take both hands inside. Place them on the ground. From here, I push out on the inside knee, so I'm getting a stretch through my adductor. Also, the rear leg, by keeping it straight, I'm getting a stretch through my hip flexor. Now, we also talked about rotational movement for the baseball players. Tennis is also be good for golf. Go ahead and throw in a rotation.
the inside arm, in which you track it with your eyes, bring it back, and then just step forward and then just switch.
Gotcha. All right, so Spider-Man, we've got the world, Spider-Man or World's Greatest Stretch. Those are good rotational ones. You showed us the inchworm. What else you got? What other?
I'll throw one more else out there. So very simple, like I said, change your direction. You said karaoke earlier. I won't show you that one. A little tight in here.
Yeah.
But just an easy one, just basically somewhat of a lateral lunge, but I call them side lean. So just stepping out, leaning, taking a step. So opposed to just holding it, and trying to get that in range of motion, it's more of a dynamic, you're moving constantly.
And that's what, that's really good in baseball, because that's what they do pretty much the whole time. That's
exactly.
Lateral step, so. Or when they're waiting for the pitch, they're just leaning back and forth. So.
Leaning back and forth.
All right, what else you got for dynamic warm-ups? Anything, any other dynamic warm-up stretches?
You can do your knee pulls here, your butt kicks, things of that sort as you're running in plays. Upper body wise, we can go ahead and do possibly some airplanes, things of that sort, across the body, so loosen up the upper body, especially for your throwing athlete. That'd be really good to do.
All right, let me check over here real quick.
All right.
All right, I'm getting nothing over there in the chat room, and I don't know about on Twitter. Let me see. All right. You got any other thoughts about flexibility, injury prevention, dynamic warm-ups that we didn't cover?
I think we may have covered it all. Now it's just putting it into the action. So, yeah, and staying consistent with it. Like I said earlier, flexibility is something that can be improved on daily. It's just a matter of taking time out and doing it.
All right, so taking it from my perspective, as an athletic trainer, you know, our job is to prevent injuries. What are some of the tips or the ways that I can encourage coaches or incorporate these into their activities without taking over? Because honestly, I just don't have time, or I'm not interested in investing that much time in taking over the weight room. So how can I incorporate this to prevent injuries to each team?
I would say if you had the opportunity, maybe taking 5 or 10 minutes and maybe pulling a couple of the athletes out and actually showing them, you know, okay, look, guys, these are things, stretches you can do for this limb. It's been shown to be beneficial because we've had maybe a high rate of injuries in this particular case. So I know, of course, school system, there's always time constraints. So you're kind of working against that. Also from there, educating the kids is going to be really huge also. And I think you have, of course, buy-in from the coach is huge. That's number one. But if you're unable to do that, then of course, helping the kids out, you get buy-in from the parents also. That's going to possibly open up some doors for you to actually show the coach a little bit more, because the kids more likely are going to go back and say, hey, coach, you know, I'm feeling good. Jeremy showed me this. It was great. I don't have any issues anymore. And that could possibly open up a door.
All right. So if I was going to incorporate one, you think the Spider-Man would probably be, if I was going to start with one saying, hey, let's try and incorporate this, and think the Spider-Man would be the best, since you called it the world's greatest stretch?
Well, they call it the world's greatest stretch. I was trying to figure that out, why they call it that. It is a great stretch. So depending on the population and the issues they've had, of course, there is kind of somewhat of a full body stretch, as you kind of saw. Mm-hmm. So it does work on a little bit of dorsiflexion also. Also, of course, stretching of the hip abductor, also the hip flexor, and then also you get some thoracic spine mobility along with it, and also some good core strength. I mean, if they're not able to have the core strength to hold themselves up, then they're going to collapse, and also helps with coordination. So I think that's a good stretch to use. Also, the inchworm is another one that you can use and kind of make that a little bit more complex as you see fit.
All right, you have any insight from any recent research or readings you've been doing about stretching?
Most of them, I haven't had a chance to read too much over stretching. But I know in the past, typically your static stretch, they want you to hold it for at least 20 to 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be after your activity. Ballistic stretching, if you're familiar with that, this has been kind of pushed to the side. It's been shown to show some negative effects, things of that sort. But dynamic has been most of the way to go before an activity.
All right. That's pretty consistent with what you've been saying throughout warm up and dynamic beforehand and static afterwards. So, well, I guess that's it. Unless you got anything else you wanted to.
I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, do you have any final takeaway thoughts from today? Maybe something you learned from me or something that you brought up. Maybe it was the ankle, the sidewalking ankle stretches.
Yeah, that I'm going to have to go look into. Take home for me today, this radio thing is a little challenge. Yeah, but no, it was fun. I greatly appreciate it. But I would say definitely if you're looking to increase flexibility, something that we all can benefit from, just spend or take a little bit of time out of your day and actually spend maybe take 5 to 10 minutes and actually stretch. I mean, you can do it before you go to bed. For some, it may help them relax and actually sleep a little bit better. But just actually spend a little bit of time and actually take care of it and take care of yourselves.
Gotcha. I think what you've been saying is reinforcing what I've heard, you know, doing the dynamic before, but seeing some of the specifics, because you always see stuff on, you know, Yahoo or whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's this stretch. Here's this exercise. Here's this. Well, that's so much more. And so, again, like I said, there was a conversation about squats are no good in sports, but than they are. And so I think just knowing, well, here's a good exercise that is dynamic, that is good to incorporate to help prevent, like you said, the Spider-Man. So maybe that's something I'll try and do whenever I go over there and work out, and I'll just try and do it myself for a little while, and then try and teach some of the students some of the things like that. So
yeah, give it a go.
I'm gonna have to give it a go. All right, we talked earlier, and Rashad is not on Twitter, so you can't contact him on Twitter. But is there any way people can contact you?
Through the Memorial Hermann website. So memorialhermann.org, Hermann with two N's, of course, and clicking the Human Performance link. From there will be sent to a 222 care line in which they can basically ask any question that they like.
All right, so memorialhermann.com and then Human Performance, and then that's where you can find Rashad or some of the other strength and conditioning specialists that they have working for them, trying to help prevent injuries and return people to functional movement.
Yeah, .org. I'm sorry. Instead of .com, .org.
.org, okay, yeah. .org. You may have said it, and I just said it wrong. I don't know. So memorialhermann.org.
There we go.
All right, G-Hats continues to sponsor the CEU events. And then again, I'm going to make the announcement that School Health has partnered with the Sports Medicine Broadcast. And very soon, we're going to be able to bring monthly giveaways and maybe some special event giveaways. So School Health, we're going to be partnering with them. That is going to be, more information will be coming. And then that way you guys will be able to earn some or receive some prizes for listening and being part of the Sports Medicine Broadcast, as well as earning CEUs while you're sitting there at work. So if you want to check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can watch live almost every single Wednesday. Again, usually it's at 11 o'clock, unless there's some special circumstances. You can follow me on Twitter at PHS Sports Med. Again, PHS Sports Med. And that's probably the best way to get in touch with me via social media. So I guess that's about it. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One Kids, Rashad Ford,
thank you.
Memorial Hermann, that's a wrap.